If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
You know, that song by Emmylou Harris, a Towns Van Zandt song, Poncho and Lefty, Lefty and Poncho. Great song for a day like today when you're thinking, when the sky is, it's cold, there's no leaves on the tree, and I'm thinking about old times and people betrayed. One of the greatest betrayals was the betrayal of a president, John F. Kennedy. The news is full of it, full of the stories of the Kennedy files released by President Donald Trump, finally. And there are people that are telling you that there's nothing to look at. One of them is my friend, Corey Franklin. And other people are picking up and starting to pore over again. There's something going on in the country with Trump that I haven't really anticipated. He's giving the country a civics lesson. Oh, you say, oh, how could Trump, Trump's a Bulgarian, how could he teach me anything about civics? But he is, because you're all wrapped up in debating whether a federal judge can defy a president and stop immigration policy or change immigration policy to his will, even if the American people voted one way and the judge going the other way. Whether it's immigration policy, deportation, oh, the judge says, no, you can't deport these people, Donald Trump. Really? And then they're saying it's a crisis of confidence, constitutional issue. All that is wrapped up in the civics lesson we're getting. And another one is years ago when I was a little boy, President John Kennedy was shot in Dallas, assassinated by a bullet they say was fired by Lee Harvey Oswald. I happen to think that he wasn't alone. Other people tell me he was alone. I keep waiting for the bullet made of ice, the pristine bullet theory, and tell me about the outfit, and the outfit wasn't involved. And Jack Ruby, the Chicago outfit strip club cleaner, just shows up with his Dallas sheriff's friends of his when Lee Harvey Oswald is being dragged out and put into a car. And then Ruby comes up and pops him, and Oswald dies. To dig into this, we've asked Corey Franklin, the writer, Chicago writer Corey Franklin, who's made a study of Kennedy assassination. And he's a physician. He was also technical director of a movie that was full of paranoia, The Fugitive. Do you remember that one? As always, here is Jeff Carlin, executive producer, WGN Radio, my friend, future physics teacher. Say that three times quick. And I'm John Cass, editor-in-chief of John Cass News. Where for $50 a year, you can get a full, strong cup of Midwestern common sense. And where are you? As we're kicking this around, as Corey's here to tell us that it's Oswald acted alone, and I'm here telling you there's a lot going on here that I just don't understand. And you're thinking, maybe you're listening to Emmylou Harris sing those last bars of Poncho and Lefty, and you're kind of feeling wistful every time I think of Kennedy, of what was, what we had in our country. I'm a little wistful. You're on the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.
So this is a guy who lives high on the hog, and he has this Tammany Hall style attitude to power. And it's the Chicago way, absolutely.
Look, the Chicago way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago way.
The Chicago way. That's the focus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand. Defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
As promised, Corey Franklin.
Hi, John. How are you? Hi, Jeff.
Hey, Corey.
You know, I just was wondering now, what are you going to do with yourself now that there's 80,000, 89,000 pages of Kennedy stuff? Kennedy files. What are you going to do with yourself,
Corey? I'll let other people read them. I don't have to read them to know what's in there because I know what's not in there. And what's not in there is any tangible evidence that Lee Harvey Oswald had any help killing Kennedy. So let them knock themselves out, but it's not going to be in there.
Wait a second. Now, Corey is, of all people, I mean, you were technical advisor to one of the most conspiracy-minded movies I've ever seen, The Fugitive. And now you're telling me that Operation Mongoose is just, what, a joke?
No, Operation Mongoose is real. You know, the CIA was trying to kill other foreign leaders, especially Castro, and they lied about that to the Warren Commission. There's no question about that. But that's far different than they were in collusion with Lee Harvey Oswald to kill JFK. There's zero physical evidence for that. In fact, the new files can't even identify an agent who talked with Oswald.
What, wasn't there something in that? I'm just referring to stuff I heard now. This is how much I kept it at arm's length. I kept it at, like, I must have had like a ladder and kept it between us. But I thought there was a guy in those files who basically was talking about J. Edgar Hoover and said something like, after Kennedy is killed, then this and that will happen.
I don't know specifically about that. But again, that's the kind of thing that may be in the files, but that's not the same as tangible evidence. You know, there aren't really conspiracy theories. There are conspiracy allegations. And these people can identify some fact here and there of why it couldn't have happened the way the Warren Commission said. But when it flat comes down to it, they cannot come up with a counter theory that explains all the stuff we do know about wounds, about ballistics, about investigation. They can't come up with that. You know, I talked with Jefferson Morley, who is the leading CIA, leading expert on the CIA and the JFK assassination. And I asked him, okay, fine. You have all this stuff. He wasn't a good shot, or he wasn't this or that. How did the CIA do it? Who did it? How did they do it? Where's the evidence? Where's the gun? Where's the escape? And he couldn't give me anything. And I said, you know, there are two questions that you can't really answer. The first question is, if Lee Harvey Oswald didn't do it, what was he doing up on the sixth floor of the book depository with a rifle he smuggled in that shot three shots that he left there that was his rifle and then escaped? And the second question is, if Lee Harvey Oswald didn't kill Kennedy, who did and how did they do it?
This is so simple to answer. I can't believe I'm being asked to do this because it's so simple. Come on. Number one, what's he doing up on the what floor was it? Sixth floor? Sixth floor of the school book depository?
Yeah.
He was there as a patsy. He was there to be set up. The outfit was going to kill Kennedy from the grassy knoll. Johnny Rosales was involved. That's why he ended up in the oil drum. Come on. You of all people know this.
Oh, I've heard that. Let me address that in two ways. The first of all, Lee Harvey Oswald keeps saying he was a patsy. Was he a patsy 45 minutes later when he gunned down a police officer with four people as witnesses? Doesn't sound like he was a patsy there. The second thing is, you know, the interesting thing, and you'll get a kick out of this, John, and maybe you will too, Jeff, is that the FBI had bugged the mob headquarters here in Chicago. They had bugged Accardo and all the outfit, and they happened to be listening in when the news came over that Kennedy was killed. And William Romer, who was the number one agent, you probably know all about him, William Romer, who was the number one agent for the FBI and the mob, said, you know, Anthony Accardo and all those guys were as shocked as anybody when they heard that Kennedy was killed.
Right, because it's a supposition there would be that if they had planned it, they had pulled it off, they would have been cheering, not knowing they're being listened to. Even if they thought they were maybe listened to, do you think they, I mean, so that's the counter argument, right?
Right.
Was there a meeting afterward where Romer is congratulated by Big Tuna for taking the heat off him on the Kennedy thing? Like, thanks a lot.
They had a meeting in 65 where they saluted each other as I think Romer was retiring then. The other thing is, the other question that I ask the people is, you know, when Kennedy was killed, who was the number one law enforcement officer in the country? And people tend to say J. Edgar Hoover, but that's not true. J. Edgar Hoover's boss was Robert Kennedy, who happened to be not only John Kennedy's brother, but his best friend. So here's the guy who at his disposal has every element of law enforcement, local and federal, in his purview, who hates the mob, who's not crazy about the CIA, even though he may have worked with them, and yet he never uncovered it. He never exposed it. He never, you know, said, oh, this is what happened.
And he was assassinated, right?
Well, you know, the funny thing, John, I have to tell you, because this is one of my favorite stories, and it says a lot about conspiracy theorists. I was renting a copy of JFK from Blockbuster around about 1993, and there was a slack-jawed teenager behind the counter, and I was getting the thing, and I said to him, you know, this didn't really happen like this. This is all made up. And he said, why do you say that? I said, well, and I used the Robert Kennedy thing. I said, so the number one law enforcement officer, his best friend and brother, couldn't expose this? And he said to me, well, they killed him too.
Exactly.
And that was a good answer. I didn't have an answer for that.
Nobody has an answer for it. I have not yet heard a good explanation of what the heck happened.
And that's the thing with, you know, human psychology, right? That's what separates us from the wild animals, is our ability to see and act on your trends or patterns or things and put things together. But it's also our downfall when it comes to conspiracy theories, because it, you know, it looks good, it feels good. Now, the one thing that not one thing, but one of the things I think is interesting is the idea that supposedly Oswald bought his gun from a dealer who was connected to the CIA and was supposedly a CIA guy. I mean, there's a lot of things that say it smells kind of like the CIA could have done this, or they could have, you know, were held, had another external group like, you know, Mexico or Cuba or someone else work for their means. How do we explain away all the things that kind of feel or are CIA adjacent?
Well, you know, Jeff, that's the kind of thing that prompts the conspiracy theories. In reality, Oswald bought his gun mail order from a Chicago mail order house for, I want to say, $12.50. And I think the site might have cost him a little more. But it was a mail order rifle that he got, that he saw an ad for in a magazine. It wasn't any nefarious type of thing. And it's very interesting because when Oswald was apprehended, he was questioned by a guy named Will Fritz, who was the homicide guy, the head homicide guy, head detective in Dallas, who had a reputation for being the best interrogator in the country. And he had him for about 8 hours. And he never broke Oswald down in terms of, yes, I killed Kennedy, or yes, I shot Tippit. But he uncovered all these lies, and they knew they were lies that Oswald said, including the rifle. The rifle was clearly Oswald's. It was clearly bought in a sporting goods store, a Klein sporting goods store in Chicago.
Is that the same sporting goods store that sells pristine bullets?
I think so. I think they had a special sale that time. And you've got a picture of him with the rifle. His wife took a picture of him with the rifle, which is the same rifle that was left on the sixth floor of the book depository.
There are three dogs in this podcast, and we're all chewing on the ear of a deadly killer hog. and that is Corey Franklin, writer, doctor, our friend, and Jeff Carlin, WGN producer, and me, talking about the Kennedy assassination. Because there's 89,000 documents that are out now that Trump has declassified. I have not even read a page.
No, I mean, neither. I mean, I've been reading some of it when it pops up and someone shows me some, you know, scribbled on, redacted, you know, thing. It's like, oh, yeah, maybe that's it. Yeah, that's the one interesting thing. But the gun thing, I mean, you know, a guy buys a mail order gun and pulls off the shot of the century. I mean, that's the other side, you know, conspiracy. Like, oh, how's he do that, right? I mean, it's just so, it's so rife for conspiracy because there are so many just things that are like, I mean, I could believe the story that I'm given, but I could also go the other way. And I am not I'm a conspiracist as you know, in jocular sense. I love, you know, picking into them and seeing what happens. But do we think the benefit? I mean, that always costs, you know, John has always taught me, follow the money, right? Follow the benefit. Who benefits the most?
Qui bono, right.
Right, exactly. So where, I mean, that's the thing I can't wrap my head around. I mean, who ultimately benefits from this? Because it's not like he was king of America, you know, king
who
of the
benefits?
Country.
The military industrial complex, the CIA, the deep state, the same people that are, you know, now they have their own newspaper, the New York Times, that's made a fool out of itself. These are the people.
But don't you think if they were that coordinated and that tactical and the ability to pull off the murder of a president in broad daylight on live TV, essentially, couldn't they get around getting him removed from power or work around him in a way or wait him out for 4 years or, you know, just some other way, easier way to go about taking the guy's control of what you're doing out?
I'm not the guy who shows up at the birthday party with a magician and picks apart the magician's tricks. Like, it's in his other hand. It's
that's
in
me.
The rabbit. No, that's, I think it's you and Corey. I'll let Corey answer that question.
Okay. Well, you know, Jeff, one thing I have learned from this continual drip, drip, drip of documents is the facts don't matter that much. You know, it's almost, for some of the conspiracy people, it's a religious thing. And for some of them, it's a financial thing. But so, for instance, the shot of the century. Now, I could tell you that Oswald was a marksman, means if he shot 10 times from 200 yards, he would hit the target 8 out of 10 times.
Moving target.
A stationary target. Okay. And in this case, he had a sight, a 4 magnification sight at 88 yards. So it was less than half the distance of what he shot in the Marines. And with the sight, it was about one-fifth the distance. And he could put his, he could rest his arm on the boxes. Now, there is one thing in the files that say, well, the KGB said it was a bad shot. But look, he didn't have 6 seconds to shoot, as they have said for 20 years. He had somewhere between 8 and 11 seconds to shoot. But that doesn't matter. I could explain that all day with facts. The conspiracy theorists are going to say he was a terrible shot. He couldn't make the shot. Oliver Stone, he had droopy drawers or whatever he said. It doesn't, the facts don't matter that much. Everything that they point out, that they say, how could this have happened, is explainable. But they don't want the explanations. So when you get a million files that are released, and there's not a single shred of physical evidence in the files that said Oswald had help, you only draw one of two conclusions. One conclusion is they were so nefarious that they've hidden everything since then. And the other conclusion is there's really nothing to hide from the standpoint of the assassination. There are obviously things to hide, Operation Mongoose and other things. There's nothing to hide. It's almost a religious thing. You either believe or you don't, and no explanation is going to suffice. Again, the one thing that I ask the conspiracy theorists, if this did not happen this way, explain how it happened, given what we know. And I have never, ever from one of them seen a good explanation, seen even a reasonable one.
You need a detective who will talk to you about the greatest government sin, and that is the sin of omission. For example, why was the shooter, why didn't we find the Trump shooter on the building, on the top of the building with all these FBI guys around, the Secret Service? Why didn't anyone see him up there, crawling around up there in plain view? I guess I didn't see it. Sin of omission. I missed it.
That's explainable too than what we've been doing though, John. I mean, we've seen it. He was seen around, and local cops weren't given access and were kind of cordoned off. I mean, it's either it was
interesting, isn't it?
No, I mean, yeah, but again, it kind of follows the same lines as what we're talking about. You know, it's easily explainable that people failed because humans are human, and there was clearly terrible oversight. Or we can believe, they have to believe, that a whole bunch of people were involved in making sure some guy could get up on a thing and local. Like, I mean, there's just too many steps to have to follow to say, well, then you have to explain this, and then you have to say, well, no, but that's, you know, there were this many people involved in it. The simplest explanation is people failed to do their jobs to the extent that they wanted it to be done. And are they nefarious? Maybe they were failing on purpose. Maybe they weren't. But it still comes down to human failure, not some conspiracy to take out a president.
I will tell you, John, I have far more questions about the attempted Trump assassination than I do about the JFK assassination, because we have far less information to go by.
Right.
I mean, with the Kennedy assassination, you know, there were some, I mean, people don't trust the CIA, they don't trust the government anymore. But, you know, what Johnson did do was he picked people who had the highest reputation for probity in the country. People like Gerald Ford and people like Earl Warren. And, you know, those people went at their jobs and they took it very seriously. There was a congressman from Ohio who was running, I think it was against John Glenn in the 80s. And his thing was he was going to find out. He had all the access to all the information and he was going to break the case. And he knew that the only way he could beat John Glenn was to break the Kennedy case. So he put in all this time to do it. And at the end of the time, he said, I can't break the case because the case is pretty solid and I'm not going to beat John Glenn. There are plenty of people of goodwill who have looked at this in great detail and they can't come up with a workable counter theory.
Well, I guess that's it then. I guess that's it. Just kill the president. We walk away. We shut our. I'm sticking my hands in my pockets, kicking the can down the road, and they kill the president. I'm okay. Okay.
Well, let me posit one thing, John, that I've said.
Please do.
Some people recently, the apex of the American century occurred at noon on November 22nd, 1963. If you look back at the state of the country a half an hour before Kennedy was killed, I don't think the country, and you look at it from every angle, race relations, foreign policy, culture, everything, I don't believe the country had any higher status than a half an hour before John Kennedy was killed. And after he was killed, we certainly had our peaks and valleys, the moon launch and the fall of the Berlin Wall and Reagan and all that stuff. But the apex of the American century was as John Kennedy was getting in that limousine to come through Dealey Plaza.
And what does that tell us?
I mean, that tells us that we got a lot of work to do in this country.
How do you feel about Area 51? If we're talking conspiracy theories. Anybody? Anybody?
Are you going to tell me that there's no UFOs too now? Can we just do the whole thing?
I mean, I can give you my theory on aliens, but...
The professor of physics tells us there's no UFOs. It's all...
No, not that. Not what I'm saying. I'm saying that if there are quote-unquote aliens here on our planet, they're not coming here. They're not coming from far away to here. They're already here. They were here before us, and they're still here, and that's what we're seeing. This idea that there are, that we randomly, you know, we, as a entity, as a humanity, we've only been broadcasting things out into space that would be noticeable by anybody for barely 100 years, you know, powerful enough to reach the far ends of space, barely 100 years, which is less than a, you know, blip in time. So you have to think someone could catch that sound, that wave, which takes forever to travel across the galaxy,
right,
recognize it, find out where it came from, pinpoint it, and then travel to its existence. Even if they have the most complex and advanced technology, it's just physically impossible to be that accurate and be that lucky. I mean, you have a better chance of killing Kennedy four times in a row.
And then unleash a giant robots that suck our brains out of our heads through a straw.
Jeff, the whole alien question is above my pay grade, so I don't want to weigh in on
it. I understand.
But I would say one thing. You know, Robert Klein, you remember the old comedian?
Yeah, sure.
Robert Klein did a whole routine about this. He says, how come it is whenever anybody spots the aliens, it's some farmer from... Western Oklahoma. How come these aliens never go to the Princeton Center for Advanced Studies? You know, they always wind
up. They did. They did. Michael Rennie did.
Yes.
Michael Rennie did that. Exactly. He helped them solve the whatever with algebraic equation with on the board.
Yes, with Sam Jaffe. Gort, Klaatu, Parada, Nikto.
That is the key to the universe, as we all know. I'm just surprised that Jeff doesn't understand the power of cinema to explain that and the Kennedy assassination. All you got to do is watch 3 Days of the Condor and then watch Shooter with Mark Wahlberg. And that explains everything.
You know, when you talk about that, and I'd be the first one not to deny the power of Oliver Stone's JFK, even though it's a sort of a made-up propaganda. But right, at the same time, there's a guy named Donald Belisario. And his story is very interesting. Donald Belisario was the guy who developed Quantum Leap, the program, TV program Quantum Leap.
Yeah.
And in 1958, Donald Belisario was in the Marines with Lee Harvey Oswald.
Whoa.
And when he was there, Lee Harvey Oswald was sitting around reading communist magazines every day and everything. And he got on Belisario's nerves. And one time they almost got in a fight because Belisario thought this guy's a traitor to the country. And the rest of the guy said, he's harmless, don't worry about him. Flash forward 5 years, and Donald Belisario hears that Oswald is the suspect in the Kennedy killing. And he turns to his wife and he says, I know that guy did it. And a bunch of his buddies from the Marines call up and they say, can you believe that? That guy did it. He actually did it. Flash forward 25 years, and Belisario's son goes out to watch JFK, and he comes home and he tells his dad, you know, all that stuff about Oswald killing him, that's all nonsense. I saw JFK, and, you know, that's the real story. And Donald Belisario says, let me tell you something. I know Lee Harvey Oswald killed JFK.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting theory. I can't let go of the idea that a nefarious crew. Why did the CIA try to stop the release of all this stuff so long, so hard?
Well, I think that the CIA was very embarrassed, and the release was very embarrassed about some of the stuff they did, and they didn't want it coming out. But as I said, that's a very, very far cry from they conspired to kill Kennedy. And in fact, although Kennedy's relation with the CIA was very bad at the beginning of his presidency, by the fall of 1963, he'd sort of made peace with them. So it wasn't this blood relationship where they both hated each other. They were sort of tolerating each other. But again, there isn't a shred of physical evidence, nor is there a good explanation to how the CIA might have done this.
Right. I mean, as it stands, we're like, okay, he's the guy who did it. Someone encouraged him, got him what he needed, and Oswald, and he did it. That's theory one, right? Theory two, which is what I think is happening, and I'm assuming you do. Oswald was a crazy man, you know, crazy, but like had a thing in his head, and he wanted to do this, and that's what he did. Or three, that it was our own government that did it, and they knew he could be the fall guy, and like you said, they killed him some other way because it couldn't have been him. Like, I don't understand. Like, it's either him, not him, they did it, they didn't. I mean, you have to move. It's like a Rubik's Cube. You have to put all the pieces together to make the conspiracy theory work, and you're better off just smashing the thing and putting it together.
Right.
You know, I know we're on radio now, so you can't see us. I mean, we're on audio.
Sure.
But I'd like, for show of hands, how many people have fired a rifle? My hand's up.
I have not.
I have. Yes.
How many people have hit the target? My hands up.
Hands up. I mean, I was pretty good in Boy Scouts.
I'm not telling you. Okay, go ahead. All right. Okay. I don't see Lee Harvey Oswald or anybody else making that shot of that at a moving car, moving away from him.
Yeah, but the hardest thing of hitting a target for a distance that's moving is getting the trajectory right because of your bullet fall. But if you're six stories up, bullet fall is essentially erroneous because the way your vectors work out, the energy doesn't really work against your bullet the same way because it's not falling straight. You've got forward momentum.
John, I'm curious. Have you ever been to Dealey Plaza? Have you ever been to the museum?
No, I have not. Okay. I did not
so know. The interesting thing is, and again, I'm the one here who hasn't fired a rifle. But right. When I got there, I was shocked at how small the area is compared to what we see on television and everything like that. And it didn't look like a difficult shot at all. And the interesting thing is, every person I know who's been to Dealey Plaza and has any experience whatsoever with firearms said, you know, when you get there, it's not a hard shot at all. The thing about Lee Harvey Oswald is he may have been incompetent in many ways, but one thing he was good at, he was good at being a cold-blooded assassin. You know, just to take the shot, forget hitting Kennedy, just to take that shot requires an incredible nerve. And this guy had it.
Was he trained to do this by the KGB?
Marines. The KGB didn't think much of him at all. The Marines trained him to be, he was originally a sharpshooter. He was moved down to a marksman. But that, again, that means 8 out of 10 times you're going to hit a stationary target at 200 yards.
And that's the key. I mean, what I was talking about, the idea of bullet fall, if you're able to do that 200 yards, you understand it. And if you've got the elevation, the window becomes much, much easier to hit because there's a less of a downgrade in your bullet. You're going right in. That window goes from 6 feet tall to, you know, 4 feet. You're going to hit that thing. I mean, it makes it so much easier. And I mean, I've seen it. I'm not the best marksman by any account. But I don't think it is that crazy for a guy to hit a moving target who's been trained from, 88 yards? Is that what from the building to the car?
88 yards with a 4 magnification.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think people want to, like you said, I think the movie is really kind of what put us into this belief that now, you know, for my lifetime, because I'm considerably younger than you guys, it's been part of my life, but the only reason I ever jumped onto it in my lifetime is because of the movie.
Yes, exactly. And let me get into what I think was Lee Harvey Oswald's head at the moment of the assassination. The first shot he took missed. They think that it hit the stanchion of the traffic light, which is basically what happened when remember, 6 months before, he tried to kill General Edwin Walker, and his shot hit the windowsill. So he misses with the first shot. Now he realizes he has a very limited amount of time. It was probably 3 to 5 seconds before the second shot. He steadies himself. He hits Kennedy, and that's the shot that hit him in the back, went through his throat, and went through Connally. And by the way, there's no other way Connally could have been hit than a bullet going through Kennedy, which is another thing the conspiracy theorists seem to ignore. And then Oswald had one more shot. He had 5 seconds, 4.9 seconds. He steadied himself, and that's when he got the money shot.
And he was shooting from behind. I mean, it wasn't like he was hitting something that was moving across in front of him and he had a timeout left to right momentum. He had a straight line shot that as long as he shot a couple of shots in order high to low, he could put them all fall on target. One of them might miss, like you said, but it wouldn't matter because the other ones would hit home.
Exactly. And people ask why he didn't shoot when Kennedy was coming down Houston Street before they made the turn. And nobody knows, but I think the reason was, had he done that, and it was a shorter shot, but had he done that, he would have blocked off the exit he had from the entrance of the Texas School Book Depository. The moment he makes that shot there, everybody crowds around, and there's no way he gets out of the building. I think he consciously waited for Kennedy to be in front of him rather than to the side or in back of him, because he at least had a means of escape if he fired from behind.
John?
Am I in a debate? Like, I have to prove that Kennedy was assassinated by the outfit or conspiracy?
Well, hey, I mean, that's how I feel sometimes, John, when I play the token liberal here.
Well, I'm playing the token conspiracy theorist. But I'll tell you this, is that okay if we want to play that game? Let's play it.
Let's do it.
All right, so how does the Chicago outfits strip club owner,
right,
Jack Ruby, end up killing Oswald and getting rid of him? How does that happen?
Here's my answer to that, John. Here are the facts.
And just before you say anything, I just want to know, do you believe in coincidences?
I actually do believe in coincidences.
All right, let's go.
And that one was a coincidence. 11:20, Ruby is in the Western Union office mailing money to his stripper girlfriend or his stripper employee. There's somebody in front of him. He gets the next window and pays the money. He now walks across the street to the courthouse jail, which is unsealed, okay? And he walks down, and he has about 90 seconds to do that. Now, from Ruby's standpoint,
we're talking about. Yeah.
Yes, from that standpoint, if the woman or whoever was in front of him messed up their account or screwed up too long or anything like that, Ruby doesn't make it. On the other side, Oswald was in his cell upstairs. He was supposed to leave at 10 o'clock, but the postmaster wanted to know all about the rifle, how he got the rifle from Chicago and everything like that. So he interrogated him for another hour till 11. Oswald was let out of the cell, but it had gotten cold there in Dallas. So he said, I left my sweatshirt in the jail cell. Can I go back and get it? And they let him go back and get it. All that took 90 seconds plus. If he doesn't go back, if Ruby has the lady in front of him, takes longer period of time, those two never convene at the same place. Ruby had such a limited window to kill Kennedy, it had to be a coincidence. And in fact, by the way, the reason you know it's a coincidence, when Ruby went to trial, his lawyer was Melvin Belli. They never even raised the question of a conspiracy. They were trying to get Ruby off on an insanity defense. So Ruby was, and by the way, Ruby's buried in the same cemetery as my grandparents, about 20 feet away. So I see, and the real question is, somebody comes to leave stuff at his grave all the time, and I don't know who it is, but
interesting. Which cemetery is that?
That's in West Lawn in Harwood Heights.
Yeah, okay.
But it had to be a coincidence because the time that Ruby had was so limited. It was about 90 seconds. And if anything had changed that nobody could foresee, it doesn't happen.
Right. It's not like it's the time where he's got an earpiece, you know, our technology is that advanced where it's small and it could have been hidden. I mean, we've seen this thing happen in real time. If he had been coordinating, they would have had to have been a minute-to-minute coordination if it was that much of a change in procedure. So again, it makes it almost impossible for it to be anything other than a coincidence.
Exactly.
I mean, he could have been sent there to try to, you know, to get a shot, and he was just, you know, very lucky. But then again, he's then very lucky.
Right. How does he know that Oswald's not leaving at 10 o'clock? How does he know that Oswald's going back to his cell to get his sweater?
That's the question. I mean, it's not the modern day, so you can't rule technology out as a helping hand here.
Right. No cell phones.
Well, it's very difficult to believe that everything worked out perfectly to erase this man. It just defies common sense.
Let me ask you a question, John.
Yes, please.
Assume the contrapositive. Assume that there was a conspiracy. What are the odds that after 60 years, not a single person breaks silence? And remember how much money someone would get for telling that story. What are the odds that no one involved in a conspiracy breaks the silence and said, this is what happens? Let me talk to the newspapers.
There are no newspapers.
Well, yeah. It's the same, you know, you could make the same argument, conspiratorial argument that, you know, Donald Trump is a Russian plant and he's dismembering, you know, all of their government.
The New York Times won Pulitzer Prizes for that.
Right. But we don't believe him because there's no facts to it. It's all conjecture, and the CIA supposedly this, and the FBI supposedly that, and this and that. I mean, there's no there.
Right. And, you know, conspiracy theorists are going to say, oh, you're not looking at this and you're not looking at that. It doesn't matter what I'm looking at. You have these facts. You know, explain these facts any other way. It's like Sherlock Holmes said, when you've eliminated all of the impossible, the only thing left is what the truth is, however improbable. And there's no other way to explain the wounds, the ballistics. There's no way to explain all that stuff.
There is something to explain before we go. What has happened since Kennedy died or was killed to our country and to our culture? We have elevated the assassin into a heroic figure. In literature, in cinema, the killer, cold-blooded killer, that's actually, he doesn't even know his victim, or he studies the victim meticulously. It's usually a man, and they become heroic, like the Day of the Jackal, but more so. Or even now they've made a remake of it, and it's always something.
Or Mangione, this guy on Fifth Avenue.
But he's a little bit immediate. But yeah, they're making him a hero.
Right.
What happened? How does the culture spit that kind of thing out?
John, that's why I say the apex of the American century was at noon on November 22nd, 1963. At noon on November 22nd, 1963, no one would have thought of an assassin of a president or of a leader or of an insurance person. No one would have thought of them as heroic. Our country has changed. And I think it was Mary McCarthy who said, we'll get over this, but we'll never be innocent again.
Well, there are crowds supporting this Mangione, as you mentioned. It's always... It's eerie. I don't know. What do you think, Jeff?
Here's my take on it. We live in a country where it's a republic, where we have freedom beyond our wildest dreams as far as humanity goes, right? I mean, comparatively to history. So, and we have, it's a pretty liberal society. We can buy and purchase guns. We can do what we want with our own time. We don't have to really answer anybody unless we infringe on someone else's rights. Therefore, a guy like Lee Harvey Oswald getting it in his head that people in power are doing him wrong and they have to be eliminated, and buying a weapon and preparing for this and planning it out in his head over and over and over until it became a thing is completely believable, because we live in a free society that allows people to think and do whatever they want and within reason until this kind of thing happens. And that's kind of the beauty of our country. That's what we always talk about, the idea of, you know, gun laws. Well, you know, in a free society, people are going to have the ability and right to choose to pick up a weapon and do something terrible with it. That's just a fact of our culture.
Jeff,
and it's kind of a great thing in our culture.
Jeff, That's a very good point. But my son asked me, regarding 9/11, when 9/11 happened, he said,
Sure.
which one was worse, 9/11 or the Kennedy assassination? I said, well, if you look in terms of sheer life loss and stuff like that, it's obviously 9/11. But the difference was, as you described, it was imaginable. It was imaginable. I can tell you from experience, I was a kid, but I was old enough to know better. And, of course, I talked to my parents and a lot of other people. What happened on November 22nd, 1903 was not imaginable at the time. It was out of the realm of, no, that would never happen. And that's what changed. It changed after that day.
In my life, obviously, we've talked about this. To me, 9/11 was unimaginable, and when we saw it, it changed the worldview and the perspective of for me, in my generation. I know a lot of people who kind of feel the same way, and obviously, we're younger, so we'd have a different perspective. But I get that point, right? I mean, it may have been imaginable because Kennedy, but I knew Kennedy had been assassinated when I was a kid, and when 9/11 happened, I was in my teens. I was 18, and it easily was like, what the how. What? I mean, it had a Pearl Harbor kind of feel to it, right? You couldn't imagine that happening.
Right.
I mean, you could in war movies or whatever. And I see that point, and it's you're right. I mean, it's interesting, a generational then where we go from there and what changes. And that kind of leads back to the idea what John's talking about, like the CIA, like, if it's not the CIA, but the conspiracy theory, right? If you want to change the culture, you need a big moment. And if you can create that moment, then the world is yours to do with it after the fact, in theory. You kind of see that, right? You can kind of see that with Kennedy's assassination, that the world, that U.S. is going to be different after the fact, and whether that is going to be good or bad, you've got the control because you made it happen, and you were ready for it, you were planning for it. 9/11, you could kind of say the same thing, but then it goes back to the idea that it has to be so many people involved to make it stick.
Right. And William Manchester, the guy who wrote one of the books about the assassination where he got in a big fight with Jackie, he made a great point at the time. When you have such an enormous crime, you need an enormous villain. And the reason that people can't get their heads around it is we have the enormous crime, but the villain is very small. And we've never got beyond that in that respect.
Well, we think of the villain as the man who pulled the trigger, right?
Yes. It was,
But now,
in my opinion, it was a Cold War killing. I mean, this was a killing from the Cold War. Oswald was a Cold War warrior, for the Marxists.
and ever since then, the conspiracy theories that won't go away, I think, are evocative of the anger that Americans have towards the deep state.
Yes. In fact, after Kennedy was killed, one of the first implications of the CIA was a newspaper article in Italy that said, oh, it looks like it was a right-wing thing from the CIA and blah, 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 blah. And the KGB did that. The KGB immediately went out and said, we're going to make sure the people believe. And what that had the effect of doing is dividing the country. Didn't divide it that much then. Divided a lot more now.
Well, you can't even buy a Tesla now.
Well, I bet you could. It's just you might have to go through a war zone to get to it.
Maybe you can buy one. I can't buy one.
If I had the money to just waste, I would buy a Tesla just out of pure anger, and I'd put a pit bull in the front seat.
See, this is all a consequence of Lee Harvey Oswald.
There you go. And if it weren't for it, we wouldn't be able to have fantastic conversations about this stuff. I mean, it's so fun to pick apart. And John, I'm not, like I said, I love to embrace the idea that there's a conspiracy theory, and I'm happy to believe that there are vast conspiracies out there, but I also am an Occam razor guy.
Yeah, I think, but there's no, I don't have the luxury of, let me put it this way. I grew up over the past 30 years watching people like David Axelrod rip others who were questioning the status quo by saying, it's a conspiracy theory. That's extremism. over and over and over. And I just can't. I know why Trump was elected, because we hated that kind of thing. And I think I can't just, I won't let it go. I mean, because I don't know. Do I have to? Do I have to let it go?
No. Hey, John, I'm curious.
Yeah.
What did your parents say about the Kennedy assassination?
They killed him.
Were you old enough to remember their reaction?
I'm old enough to remember my reaction. And I was pissed off that I couldn't watch cartoons. Because I was like, what was I? 6 years old, maybe seven. You know, I wanted to watch cartoons. I couldn't understand why people were crying. And then later, at school, when we did duck and cover, I thought that might protect us from the nuclear holocaust. You know, just my little forearms.
It wasn't about protecting you, John. It was about keeping you calm.
All right.
You know, Jeff. The real question. And I don't have the answers, but the real question, and this is what Stone touched on, and he answered it, but I'm not sure his answer is right, is Kennedy lives, do we get into Vietnam? And that's a real, real hard question to answer.
Wow, yeah. You'll leave it there, John?
I think so, because I can't answer that either, and yeah. I don't want to answer it. But I think that if he lived, we would have been in there because, well, I mean, he was playing ball with all those people. He wasn't opposed to them. He was part of them, wasn't he?
Well, he was a cold warrior. There's no question about that.
Yeah, right. And I guess we'll have to leave that for another time. Thanks for being here, Corey. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, thanks, Corey. Great conversation.
Thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it.
For Corey Franklin, writer, podcaster, for Jeff Carlin, executive producer, WGN Radio, and for me, John Cass, editor of John Cass News, where you always get a good cup of Midwestern common sense. Join us again, won't you, next time on the next Chicago Way podcast on WGN+.